We have been looking at Abraham over the course of the last several weeks and the unique way that Abraham walked through culture and yet walked away from culture at the same time. Abraham lived in the world, but he was not of the world. Today we're going to talk about a part of Abraham's life that is so problematic that it causes many of us to walk away from our own faith. Abraham was called by God to leave his hometown, to leave his people, to leave his culture, all to follow God. And by extension, we have said that today, when we talk about our need, God is calling us to leave those places and spaces to follow Him. It may require us to physically get up and move. Many more times, it won't require us to move, but it will require us to change our thinking and allow our hearts to be changed. You see, I think today in our culture, we want to put God in a box. A box. We look at God and we think, you know, well, why aren't you like this? Or God is definitely like that. And yet we see God in many different ways, in many different places. I think that when we have this discussion about who God is, we need as His people to come open-minded, okay? We need to allow God to be God. And we need to understand that as we try to understand God, God will blow our minds. So maybe the best way to go about doing this, rather than try and place things into neat categories, let's let God be God. Because I'm afraid too many times we start from a place of closed-mindedness. How can we as human beings put limits on what God can and can't do, or should and shouldn't do? After all, He created life. And for God to be God, He clearly operates outside of our understanding. God doesn't need to agree with your politics. He doesn't need to agree with your policies. He doesn't need to agree with your arguments. He doesn't need to agree with your rationale. In the end, all that really is your God, not the God. The God we want to follow. God will contort and confuse our paradigms. He will thwart us as we try to pin Him down. He is God. He does what He wants to do, and He does not fit in to a box. If He did, He wouldn't be God. So a good rule of thumb this morning, a theme that you will hear time and time again, is this: God is not someone or something to figure out. He is something, someone to follow. Which is a big problem for our society today. How can you categorize something who doesn't, or someone who doesn't play by our rules? And in this story this morning, the story that Ike has read for us, God pushes Abraham to his limits. He pushes Abraham to a place where Abraham surely can't figure this all out. But God calls him, and Abraham follows. Now, Ike, for that first 8 verses that I didn't let you read this morning, he said, how come I didn't read all 18 verses? Well, Ike, I've given Dale Miller a couple of long passages of Scripture, and he's gotten to the end of the service and said, wow, that was really a lot. Like, you could trim it down. So this morning we trimmed it down. But let's go back and look at Genesis for just a couple of minutes, because God is going to ask Abraham to do something unfathomable. Sometime later, we start in verse 1. God tested Abraham's faith. He said, Abraham, he replied to God, here I am. And God said, take your son, your only son, yes, Isaac, whom you love so much, and go to the land of Moriah, and go and sacrifice him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I will show you. And Abraham, he doesn't say, well, let me think about it. He doesn't say, well, let me pray about it. It says, the next morning, Abraham got up, and he didn't just get up on time. He got up early. He got up early. He saddled his donkey. He took 2 of his servants with him, along with his son Isaac. And then he chopped wood for a fire, for a burnt offering. And he set out for the place that God had told him about. On the 3rd day of their journey, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. Stay here with the donkey, he told his servants. The boy and I will travel a little further, and we will worship there, and then we will come right back. So Abraham placed the wood for the burnt offering on Isaac's shoulders, while he himself carried a fire and a knife. And as the 2 of them walked together, Isaac turned to Abraham and said, Father. And he said, yes, my son. We have the fire, the boy said, and the wood. But where is the sheep for the burnt offering? And Abraham replied to him, God will provide a sheep for the burnt offering, my son. And they both walked on together. And when they arrived at the place where God told him to go, Abraham built the altar and arranged the wood on it. And then he tied his son Isaac up and laid him on top of the wood. And you've got to wonder what is going through Isaac's mind. What is going through Abraham's mind? And Abraham picked up his knife, ready to kill his son as a sacrifice. And at that moment, we are told an angel of the Lord came to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And yes, Abraham replied, here I am, Lord. Don't lay a hand on the boy, the angel said. Do not hurt him in any way, for I now know that you truly fear God. You have not withheld even your most precious gift, your son, your only son. And Abraham looked up and he saw a ram caught in the thicket. And he sacrificed that ram in place of his son. And Abraham named the place Yahweh Jireh, which means the Lord will provide. And to this day, God still uses that name time and again throughout the Proverbs. On the mountain of the Lord will provide. Then the angel said to the Lord, he called him again from heaven. He said, Abraham,
This is what the Lord says, because you have obeyed me and have not withheld even your son, your only son, I swear. There's God swearing, but he's going to swear on his own name. I will certainly bless you, and I will multiply your descendants beyond number. Abraham, take a look up into the sky and see the stars and the sands on the seashore. Your descendants will conquer all. They will be like the sands on the shore, and they will be like the stars in the sky. And you will be blessed, all because, Abraham, you obeyed. You didn't try to figure me out. You didn't say, well, this doesn't make sense. You didn't say, well, it's going to cost too much. You trusted and you obeyed. First off, we've got to see that some of this, you know, Abraham's doing all this. He's putting his son on the fire. He's taking him, you know, 3 days trip. All this stuff, there's discussion of what might happen to his son. And it doesn't make sense. God has spent 25 years waiting to answer Abraham's request for his son. This son comes, he becomes his prized possession, the answer to his prayers, the centerpiece of God's redemption for the world, because through Isaac, the Messiah will be born. And he is asking Abraham to kill his son. What's the point in that? The big idea today is we don't need to figure it out. We need to obey and follow. Then it gets hairy. God asked Abraham, sacrifice Isaac. Remember this Isaac, the son of the promise, the center of the plan for the world. Remember the thing about the descendants and the nations and the Messiah who would come and would tell everybody. But you can't have a nation if you don't have a son. So what's God up to? Add to God's own words his belief that human sacrifice is an abomination. The Jews hated the Moabites because they worshiped a God who demanded infant sacrifice. It's something that the Israelites just knew you don't do. And now Isaac, why would God call Abraham to kill Isaac when it was clearly something that God himself hated? A guy by the name of C.S. Lewis wrote, God is wild. God is not tame. We don't figure God out. We simply follow him. And we need to leave behind oftentimes the cultures that he is calling us out of, even when to us, in our mindset, in this moment of time, it may not make sense to us, but we need to come out of cultures. And we need to come away from our assumptions about God and how he works. C.S. Lewis said, God is wild, he's not tame. He doesn't do things that fit into our little boxes in our little world. And oftentimes his actions provide danger and risk. But for God to be God, he operates as he sees fit, not as we see fit. We just need to follow, not to figure God out. And it flies in the face of contemporary culture. We got people to say, well, I can't understand why God would condemn people to hell for not following Jesus. I can't believe in a God who lets bad things happen to good people. Or I can't believe in a God who would condone, careful in the brethren churches here, but war. Or follow a God who hides himself and doesn't reveal himself openly. There are people in our world today, a lot of them, who refuse to believe in a God who does not fit into their mental picture of what God should look like. It's like we start with a picture of God in our minds, and if we can't fit God into that picture, then we don't want to believe in him. I hope you see how closed-minded that can be. We have to open our minds. And one of the possibilities is to accept the fact that God is wild. He doesn't play by our rules. And one of the possibilities is he doesn't follow our politics or our philosophy or our worldview. Think about it. Is it possible that God is not the thing you most readily think that he is? The Bible tells us he's holy. And he is completely other. Something that you would have a hard time grasping and understanding. This illustration really kind of put things into perspective for me. Billy Graham had a cool reference for this. He said it was like having an ant farm. How many of you bought your kids an ant farm when they were little? Or how many of you had an ant farm when you were a kid? They would take these two pieces of glass and they would dump in sand and dirt and ants. And then you would watch the ants start to dig and channel, and you'd get all these little paths and trails and colonies. Graham said, trying to communicate with us as human people is like God being some guy outside of the ant farm, tapping on the glass. Hey, ant, what's going on in there? From the perspective of the guy on the outside tapping the glass, he's just interested in getting the ant's attention and seeing what he's doing. Maybe see if he can direct them another way. But on the flip side, the ant who's inside the plant, the farm, the ant farm, this isn't some little, this is this big, arms coming out of everywhere, pounding on that ant farm. It's like an earthquake. The thud of the finger. And the ant is unable to make sense of it all. He thinks the earth is ending. And he wonders, why would God allow an earthquake? Aren't you glad God came in the person of Jesus so that we didn't have to run for cover? And I wonder if that's part of why God did that, to make sure we understand what it means to follow him. It isn't that we follow God when we feel good or it makes sense. It means for us to follow God even when it doesn't make sense, even when there is risk, even when it is dangerous and wild. Ever talk to somebody who tried to commit suicide? All right. I talked to a person whose family, you know, they were go to church, God, family. But a couple times in their teenage years, this youngster decided at some point the pain of living was worse than the pain of ending it all. Thankfully, she tried twice and was unsuccessful. After those unsuccessful attempts, she ran away and was living with somebody. It seemed to work out first to great, but eventually that person became an abuser, and she realized she needed to get out of that presence. On her way out that day, she passed a church that she had passed 100 or more times. And the circumstances created in her mind at that moment led her, drew her into that church, into a pew, and into prayer. In that moment, that just that one circumstance, her mind was open, and there she felt the presence of God. But she had to be broken. And sometimes that's the way God works. In fact, a lot of times that's the way God works. He has to break us to help us to realize our need and our dependence on him. You see, we think too many times God is in the midst of us and he's just looking around looking at us. But God, would anybody get upset if I stepped on this chair? Okay, good. God is looking at the world from eternity. Can you see that? Can you understand that? He is looking at it out there. And he is moving, not from inside, just worried about one person or another person, but he is seeing everything. He can wildly pull us out of sin that we are trapped into. Because one day, he knows, we will look back, you know, 10,000 years from now, into the future, and we will struggle. We will struggle with words like cancer. We will struggle with words like, what was that word? Abuse, that's right. And we will struggle with those words because those words will over time lose their meaning. God's justice isn't just for this life. It is forever. It is for those who can't believe in a God who for some reason base their conclusions on the boundary of time. But God is not short-sighted. He always has the long game in mind. And outside of the boundary of our knowledge, we need to understand. The thing is not to figure out God. The thing is to follow God. I remember as a teenager, it's getting to be a long time ago now, I would do something wrong and I'd think, I just apologize to God. And do it again and again and again. I just kept thinking, God will forgive me. And it's true. While he always, though, forgives, a lie, that action, that lie has consequences. And that's at the crux of the story. Our decisions have consequences. When Jesus went to the cross, God is like, Abraham, I know about how you felt. I'm about to go through what you almost went through, but this time it's going to be 10 million times worse. We're much better off following God than trying to figure him out. I think one of the big takeaways here is we've got to have an open mind about God. When we get into discussions about Jesus and God and the Bible, and we find ourselves saying these cliché-ish things like, I can't believe God exists in a world with famine, or I don't believe God exists in a church where folks fight all the time. Can you imagine that, the church fighting all the time? You're supposed to laugh because you all fight all the time. We'll get into that, the deacon piece. We'll get into that after church this morning. But God should not fit quietly and sit nicely in our minds. The minute you start having God sitting nicely in your mind, you have come to the point where it is not God. It is a God of your brain. God conducts his business from the courts of eternity. There's too many things that we can't see or fail to see. And it's tempting to draw conclusions about God from a finite perspective. But faith is an open-mindedness. So my question to you is this. Is there any place in your life where you struggle with God the most? Do you ever say, I can't, when it comes to God, because of something deeply personal that you struggle with? Maybe you lost a child. Maybe you watched your parents suffer at the end of life. Maybe you struggle with a sickness of attraction. Maybe you ask God, why me? It's hard to trust God has a plan, even in the midst of our messes. He may not have willed it, but he can transform it. I just ask you to keep an open mind about God's motives and how much you try to understand him compared to sitting under his presence. How much are you trying to figure God out? And how much are you concentrating on following?